Good morning. I'm going to ask you to open in your Gospels to Matthew 28. We're not going to stay very long in Matthew 28, but that's where we will start. I've already chatted with some of you, and you've complained about some sinus issues. Well, I'm complaining as well. Started up yesterday, some sinus issues. Maybe that rain shook some things up for us. What a difference a week makes. It was all dark and horribly cloudy and rainy out there a week ago this time. But beautiful, beautiful day. Anybody get out and enjoy the beautiful day yesterday? We ate some lunch at the mall. My daughter, Jenny, is visiting with us, and she said, "I can't find a parking space." And I thought, oh, you know, she just needs to go here or there. It was packed. So anybody at the mall yesterday? Wow, a lot of folks there. Well, I'm glad you're here this morning. Looking forward to spending some time studying one of my favorite post-resurrection appearances. My father is preaching. This is our fifth Sunday, and he's preaching this morning. And everything should be fine. Everything should be fine as long as he doesn't start by saying, "Now this sermon is going to be short." Then we're going to be here about an hour. Whatever he was preaching for a time, years and years ago. Melanie and I just, I think we were dating still and got married. So this is back in 90, 92. And every time he would get up and say that, we'd all look at each other. My mother, Melanie and I, and go, "It's going to be a long one." So don't say that. Don't say that this morning. No. Just preach the word, and we'll looking forward to that lesson. All right, Matthew 28 is one of the passages we read last week when we were looking at the first post-resurrection story. And I want to say post-resurrection appearance, but it's not an appearance. Because do they see Jesus? Do the women, who when they go to the tomb, do they see Jesus? Well, they don't. They will soon, but they went there early Sunday morning. They were on their way with their spices to properly bury Jesus. It had been hurriedly done the Friday before as the sun was setting. You don't leave a dead body up. And they're there after the Sabbath on Sunday morning. Who's going to roll the stone away for us? Well, it was already rolled away. Who's sitting on it? Who's sitting on the stone? An angel. And they're already pretty fearful. They go inside. And they're horrified because there's no body. And who talks to them? One account says an angel. Another one says a man in white clothing. And he tells them, "Why seek the living among the dead?" That's Luke's account. Look at Matthew 28, verse 8. "So they departed quickly from the tomb with fear and great joy and ran to tell his disciples." You remember we spent a lot of time looking at Mark's account, Mark 16, verse 8. What does Mark's account leave out? Two things that we find here in Matthew 28, verse 8. They didn't, in Mark's account, Mark 16, verse 8, they didn't run. Now, of course, we know the rest of the story. They did. But what else was left out? Yeah, they didn't speak to no one. Matthew 28, verse 8, it's a double negative there. Great joy is mentioned here. What was mentioned? It wasn't mentioned in Mark's account, and what was emphasized was their fear. Now, in this passage it says fear and great joy. You've all experienced that before, haven't you? Fear and great joy all at the same time. When do you normally experience something like that? The birth of a child, maybe a car accident, and you go, "Oh no!" But everybody's okay. Okay, good. Great joy. It's kind of a neat experience. Y'all remember that movie? It's a children's movie, but it's really an adult movie. Inside Out, is that what it's called? And it talks about the emotions of a little child, and as they get older, they become more complex, and so you combine happiness with sorrow. And that's kind of part of what's going on here. You have happiness, great joy, combined with fear. Well, that's a feeling a lot of folks are going to have here, because they don't understand why Jesus died. They want to believe he's raised from the dead, but they just don't understand. And Jesus was killed by the Romans. That terrifies them. Between verses 8 and 9, there are two more post-resurrection stories. You can't see them here because they're not in Matthew's account. But they're in Luke and John. In Luke's gospel, it does tell us about Peter and the beloved disciple. I'm sorry, it mentions Peter going to the tomb. And then John gives us more details about that. John and Peter going to the tomb. And we're going to look primarily at John's account. So let me go and bring this up. Here are the passages that we're going to look at this morning. Luke 24, 9 through 12. And we're going to camp out in John 20, verses 2 through 10. These two passages that I've just added occur between Matthew 28, verse 8 and verse 9. If you have a copy of Amazed by Jesus, the second volume, it'll detail that for you. It'll show you, so you don't have to remember this. We'll talk about this next week as well. But what you have are four Gospels where there's not correspondence with each other. Hey, what are you going to talk about? How are you going to put this? It's vivid. These are eyewitness accounts, and it's a little messy. Is it contradictory? I don't believe it is, but it does get a little bit uncertain at times. You know, what exactly happened and when? And what you have here is the women all excited, going and telling the disciples, and yet Mark's account says, hold on. They didn't go immediately. They were kind of shaken, pretty shaken about this. Yes, sir.
One thing in all of that, it's almost like things that happen in families and all.
That's right.
Things got a little complicated, no key, not clear. One person knows something, the other one doesn't. There's interaction and interchange. And it's almost like it's developing a way human interaction.
That's right. It's exactly like that. I believe that this is actually an evidence for the inspiration of the Bible, that these guys are not corresponding with each other. It is complicated. Who's appearing here? Who's coming here? Who said what? And yet it all blends together. And it's just very vivid. These are people. They're not making this up. They're reporting what happened. And it's just exciting to read about. So in Luke 24, you see in verses 1 through 8, the women coming to the tomb, the body's not there, and then the angel telling them in verse 5, why do you seek the living among the dead? He is not here. Go into Galilee and remind everybody, you remember this, right? That the Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men and be crucified, and on the third day rise. Look at verse 8. They remembered his words. And then we're picking up with verse 9 for today. And returning from the tomb, they all told these things to the 11 and to all the rest. Now it was Mary Magdalene and Joanna and Mary, the mother of James, and the other women with them who told them these things to the apostles. But these words seemed to them an idle tale, and they did not believe them. But Peter rose and ran to the tomb. Stooping and looking in, he saw the linen cloths by themselves, and he went home marveling at what had happened. Now, the account we're going to look at it, mainly this morning, John 20, it mentions Peter going to the tomb and the beloved disciple. And we say that's John the Apostle. It's not mentioned in Luke's account that John went with him, but they both go. Something else to make note of, it mentions Mary Magdalene in verse 10. She apparently, when the women all went to the tomb, I lost my microphone. When they all went to the tomb, Mary Magdalene stayed behind. Because next week, in John 20, verses 11 through 18, we're going to be looking at Mary Magdalene going to the tomb, and she is the first person to see the resurrected Lord. She actually gets to see Jesus. So these first two incidents we're talking about, the women at the tomb, and then the 11 apostles, Peter going to the tomb and reporting back. There's no body. There's no Jesus. So that, I think that's something good for us to keep in mind. So Luke 24, 9 through 12. What else do you see here? What was the response of the 11? What? Why? Why won't they believe the women? After all, hadn't Jesus told them not once, not twice, but three times, that's recorded in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, three times he told them, I'm going to Jerusalem, I'm going to die, I'm going to be raised from the dead. Why didn't the apostles then go, well, okay, all right, I guess he is raised from the dead after all, when the women tell them? Why didn't they believe these women? Because they're women. Right. Of course, nobody's been seen yet anyway. Now, in our 21st century world, are we going to take the word of a woman over a man? Josh? Depends. Okay. We don't have the prejudices that they had in the Judeo judicial system, which was a fantastic system of laws, and we base our judicial system on what God provides in the Old Testament. Well, it's not in the Bible, but they, as part of their Mishnah, their recordings of this time period, their beliefs, you don't take the testimony of a woman at face value. Why is it then that God, in His providence, allowed these women to be the first people to discover the empty tomb? Because the apostles don't even believe it. Why should we believe it? Who's going to believe them? They're all emotional and caught up. Maybe they went to the wrong tomb. We talked about that last week. How can you believe that the women went first? All right, so let's say you're in the first century world and you have these prejudices, and I believe the apostles did. They had a lot of prejudices that they had to unlearn through the gospel. And you're writing about this. You say, yeah, the women were first at the tomb. Let me just leave the women out. That would make sense, wouldn't it? To just leave the women out so that people in your generation would say, oh, well, the apostles were the first ones, so therefore it must be true. How embarrassing is it to the men, to the 11, that they refuse to believe? Yes, sir.
It could be a lesson for the apostles of humility. And if you think about it, maybe it had to happen that way, that it's here to one of the apostles first. Who knows what they have skewed in their mind? I'm the most important one.
Yeah. I think that's an excellent observation. Yeah. Do you think it was humbling for these guys to not be the first ones to find the empty tomb and then have egg all over their face when Jesus appears later that Sunday, that very Sunday? Yes, sir. Okay. The last will be first, the first will be last. The Bible, especially Luke's gospel, places women on a pedestal in a culture that treated them as second-class citizens. I think that's an important lesson for us to remind ourselves of. We take it for granted today. All right, Melanie?
The final parts of the apostles were crushed at the death of Jesus and they gave him the answer. They were going to go back to their lives. It was the women that were going back to care for the lives of the first. They were the ones with the true faith and the true life.
Yeah, but they believed he was dead.
But they still, they were going to hear him.
Yeah. So the women believed he was dead because he was. They saw him. They saw him buried. They go to the tomb. There's no body. Did they go, well, I mean, obviously somebody stole the body, and that means Jesus isn't raised from the dead. Now, when they go back and report, they're excited. And the apostles blow them off. Now, why does it keep saying 11? Why are we reading about the 11? I thought there were 12 apostles. Okay. All right. Judas is out of the picture. Now he's the 11. In a couple of weeks, we're going to talk about the 10. The 10 being together on this very Sunday morning when Jesus appears to them. And there was one more apostle, number 11, who wasn't with him. And who? Which apostle was that?
Thomas.
So where was Thomas? Couldn't make it. And we'll talk about that in a couple of weeks. Why did only Peter run back to the tomb? Or excuse me, Peter and the beloved disciple that we're going to read about in John 20. Why did only two of the 11 go back? What does that tell you about these guys? They didn't even consider that as a possibility. Have you experienced this, where you have a clash of worldviews, mindsets, and you know what the other person believes, but you are so wanting to convince them of your position that you pretty much ignore what's really going on, and you just butt heads constantly. Maybe at work, where you say the paper clips need to go in this right here, and then the pens need to go in this container right here. You know, I'm thinking of something pretty mundane, but and you just refuse to accept that they're never going to see it your way, and so they're gonna scatter the pens all over the place, and you put them together and all that. That's kind of what it is. Maybe that's not the best illustration, but the apostles are trying to force Jesus to fit their mold. It's like what people do today. They take God and put him in their box, but you know, control him, confine him. But that's not going to work. We come to the Bible sometimes and we want it to conform to what we think it ought to say and what it ought to do, instead of letting the book transform us. And that's how these guys are. They are depressed. They're just overwhelmed with grief because Jesus is dead, and they refuse to believe. They refuse to accept. Where does it say in verse 12, for example, that Peter believed when he went to the empty tomb and said, "Well, the women must be right." Let me read verse 12 again. "But Peter rose and ran to the tomb. Stooping and looking in, he saw the linen cloths by themselves, and he went home marveling at what had happened." Now, does that mean he now believes Jesus is raised from the dead? All right. With one exception. And that's what we're going to look at now. So, I did want to mention this verse. Later in Luke, we'll look at this in 3 weeks, the road to Emmaus. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb. This is the two on the road to Emmaus who are reporting to the apostles. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but him they did not see. So just to emphasize, in the first two, we're calling them post-resurrection appearances, but they're really not. They went to the tomb and it was empty. The women, Peter and John, go to the tomb. It's empty. And now let's spend the remainder of our time in John 20. John chapter 20. Him they did not see. Well, we're not going to see Jesus today. Where is he? That's another interesting question. Where is Jesus? Let's read. We looked at verse 1 last week, and so it's part of the women's appearance, but let's read verses 1 through 10. And keep in mind what we just read in Luke 24, 9 through 12. Now on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb early, while it was still dark, and saw that the stone had been taken away from the tomb. Now, John doesn't mention all the other women, because he's going to focus on Mary Magdalene starting in verse 11. Here's verse 2. She ran and went to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one whom Jesus loved, we'll call him John, and said to them, "They have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him." So Peter went out with John, the other disciple, and they were going toward the tomb. Both of them were running together. But the other disciple, John, outran Peter and reached the tomb first. Maybe that's why John wasn't mentioned, because Peter probably told him, "Don't put that in there." No, just kidding. Just kidding. Peter got outrun. We'll talk about that. Stooping to look in, he saw the linen cloths lying there, but he did not go in. So that's John. He gets to the tomb first. He looks in. He sees the linen cloths lying there. Verse 6. Then Simon Peter came following him and went into the tomb. And look at verse 6. It has the same exact sentence as verse 5. He saw the linen cloths lying there, and the face cloth, which had been on Jesus' head, not lying with the linen cloths, but folded up in a place by itself. Okay. Do you see on the screen? I've given us verse 5 and verse 6. John stands there at the mouth of the tomb, this hewn rock tomb. He saw the linen cloths lying there. Peter goes on in, and he sees a little more. In addition to the linen cloths, verse 7 says the face cloth. We're going to talk about the face cloth. What does it say? They saw the linen cloths. John saw it. Peter saw it. Let's keep going. Verse 8. Then the other disciple who had reached the tomb first, then John, also went in. He saw and believed. For as yet they did not understand the scripture that he must rise from the dead. Then the disciples went back to their homes. Which of the two disciples, Peter or John, which of them believed?
John.
Does this mean that Peter also believed, and he's just not mentioned as having believed? Or do we couple this with Luke 24, verse 12, and understand Peter looked and had a very different reaction than John? Why? And what does it mean that John believed? What is the key concept in the Gospel of John? It occurs over 100 times as a verb and as a noun. Belief. John has been dubbed the Gospel of Belief. So this is not just some, "Oh yeah, he believed, let's go on to Mary Magdalene." No, this is significant. It is time for us to pause and to think about what it means to see the grave clothes and walk away from that marveling. Huh? And somebody else come in, see the grave clothes, and go, "I believe." Why is there a different response here, Peter and John? All right, different men, different personalities. What does it mean that John believed and that Peter didn't?
Some of what Jesus had been telling them all along, saying,
"Okay." Tell me about the beloved disciple in the Gospel of John. He did something that no other disciple did. When Jesus was hanging on the cross, still alive, the beloved disciple was there with his mother. And Jesus said to John, "Behold your mother." And then to his mother, he said, "Behold your son." And what do we take from that? That John is going to be responsible for his mother. Why? I mean, Jesus had other brothers, and he had brothers and sisters.
They were on
But they weren't believers at the time. So that's what we speculate. That's what we're assuming. So John has seen Jesus dead. And now he sees the empty tomb. And it makes us go, huh, you know, what is going on here? What do you think John is trying, the Gospel of John is trying to emphasize? Different reaction to the same evidence. Yes, ma'am.
Could he be dead? He doubted, and now he believes.
Okay. Yes, I think John, like the other apostles, probably went, huh? What? Ah, not going to believe this. But then when John goes, and you've seen this, haven't you? You've seen this in life, I'm sure in law enforcement. You've had people see the same evidence, and they come away with different responses. One believes, well, what does he believe? And I think what's implied here is he believes Jesus possibly, or indeed, has been raised from the dead. Here, you want this? You want me to hand it to you? What passage are you talking about? Oh, Luke 24.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and that's just a little detail relating to this that we're going to see later at the end of the encounter with Jesus, the two on the road to Emmaus. Jesus has, all I was trying to do was emphasize Jesus' body has not been seen as of yet. All we see is the empty tomb. Let me get back to where I was. All right, John 20 verse 7 says they saw the face cloth which had been on Jesus' head, not lying with the linen cloths, but folded up in a place by itself. This is the custom of the day. And if you go back to John 11, when Lazarus died, he comes out of the tomb, and what's he got on his face? He's got a face cloth. And that's what they did. They would have the face cloth on them. They would wrap them with spices to help with the smell. As the flesh decayed, they would go in months later, take the bones, put them in a bone box in an ossuary. And that's how they would bury them. Because, you know, you only have so much room, and that was just their custom. Now, part of that custom is the face cloth. Anybody have a different translation in John 20, verse 7? The face cloth. Handkerchief, which means you're using the New King James. Okay, New King James. Look at all the different translations of this little word, face cloth. ESV, face cloth. In New American Standard, has it hyphenated, big deal. Napkin, handkerchief. You know, I got a handkerchief right here. You know, there's a handkerchief. That was around Jesus' face. Burial cloth, the older NIV, the 2011 NIV says, the cloth that had been wrapped around Jesus' head. They're interpreting for us. They're trying to explain to us part of the custom. And then the New Living Translation paraphrases it this way, the cloth that had covered Jesus' head. I love words like this where it's just hard to translate them sometimes. Well, what exactly is this? I think this is more of a case of English changing. And we're trying to express it. Because you think of face cloth, we're not used to that idea of a face cloth. Have you all heard of the Shroud of Turin? Well, this is it. I don't believe in the Shroud of Turin, but even if it exists, so what? Even if it's real, it's not something I'm going to be worshiping or especially honoring. But be that as it may, that's part of that tradition, and it made its way into the very Catholic Mel Gibson's presentation of that, the Shroud of Turin. All right. I have a couple quotes I want to share with you to help us think about what's going on here. Because what you have are the cloths. You have the clothes. And something about how they are lying there. Not the face cloth is not lying with the linen cloths, but folded up in a place by itself. John sees that and he believes. Why? Here's a commentator trying to help us understand what might possibly be going on. The explanation that best fits the Johannine view of the mode of resurrection is that the body had been swiftly dematerialized, leaving the swathing clothes, there's another translation, swathing clothes, as they were, with the cloth that had been wrapped around the head still lying on the slightly raised ledge where the head had been laid. So the head's going to be propped up just a little bit, and keeping its annular shape. Y'all know what annular means? I used it 2 times last week. I use that term all the time. Had to look it up. And it, what it's saying is that the cloth still has its shape. Now, in the case of Lazarus, what did Jesus command them to do when he came out? Remove the face cloth. He can't breathe. He's going to die again. Now, yeah, remove the face cloth. But in the case of this, if we're reading this right, the face cloth's just lying there. And when John sees that, he goes, he wasn't unwrapped. What do you think of that? Nuts. Crazy. I bet somebody here is going, oh, I got to think about that. Here's another very, very good New Testament introduction by David Allen Black. The burial cloth which had covered Jesus' head was rolled up and left in a corner as if the original user no longer needed it. Some have suggested, so I'm not saying this is absolute, but some have suggested that the cloth covering Jesus' body retained the shape of his body. We can more safely contrast the appearance here with that of Lazarus' resurrection when they had to unroll him. So he's not saying this is it, this is what's going on, but what is it about the grave cloths that made John believe when Peter saw the same evidence and came away going, huh, I'm marveling at that. The quote continues, Lazarus came from the tomb with his grave cloths clinging to his body, but Jesus apparently passed through all the grave coverings and left them behind. John believed in the resurrection on the basis of the empty tomb, but both disciples left the tomb disappointed, is what he says about John 20, verse 10. The disciples went back to their homes. The only big difference between them is one saw the evidence and believed, and the others didn't. I want to show you something else. We're going to look at this in a couple of weeks, but in John 20, verse 19, the apostles are hiding in an upper room, and the doors are locked. Why are the doors locked? Because they're scared. I mean, the Romans killed Jesus. They're his disciples. Who's to say they're not going to come beating down the door and taking them and doing something dastardly to them? They don't. But on the evening of that day, the first day of the week, so we're still on Resurrection Sunday, it's later in the day, the doors being locked, John tells us, where the disciples were for fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood among them and said to them, hey guys, how you doing? Peace be with you. How did Jesus get inside that room if the doors were locked? Can Jesus pass through walls? If he can, and maybe he just, you know, Scotty, beam me up. And he got beamed over from one side of the wall to the other. What John doesn't tell us. Is this a miracle? Most definitely. And 8 days later, and that's when Thomas is present with the other apostles. His disciples were inside again. Thomas was with them, although the doors were locked. Same room. Jesus came and did the same thing. Comes in. Is there something different about the resurrected body of Jesus? What is different about Jesus? We know for sure he has recovered in a remarkable way from his crucifixion. Is it a new body? Well, no, because he still has the imprint of the nails. In his hands or his wrist and in his side. It's still the same body, but it's a rejuvenated body. And he has, maybe he always did, but he's exemplifying some new superpower. Wow. And that's why we are slowing down here at the end of our year-long study of the life of Jesus. And we're looking at these amazing details in these post-resurrection appearances. What do you think about what John's trying to tell us here? It's amazing, isn't it? Gives you goosebumps.
That it's so amazing that during the time that Jesus was on earth as a human being, he kept his deity, yet his appearance was that of a man. And here we have here where his deity is kind of like out there.
So he's still a
man.
All right. If you're Jesus and you're in the tomb and you're all wrapped up, how do you get out of all that tight wrapping? Who could have just come and unwrapped Jesus? Well, the same one who opened the stone, moved the stone, an angel. And an angel could have come in and say, "Hey, Jesus, hold still. All right, I'm gonna get your face cloth. All right, let's get you out of here." It wasn't a great big mess. It was just lying there in place. And I think that's what John is trying to convey to us. Let me show you, remind you of this verse and another one we know well, but we haven't seen yet. So John saw the gray clothes, how they're lying out, very unusual, very, very strange. And he walks away believing. Later in the Gospel of John, John 20, verse 29, we call these this John 30 and 31 is the next verses that basically tell us the importance of believing in Jesus. Jesus is talking to Thomas and says, "Have you believed because you have seen me?" And you remember the story. Jesus actually lets Thomas see the imprint of the nails in his side. "Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." Just yesterday, got to talking with a salesperson. We helped Jenny get a car yesterday, and she wanted to tell us, "Oh, you're a preacher. Well, let me tell you about my testimony." And she said, "You know, people just don't believe unless they see something." And so she started to tell her amazing story about how she underwent a medical procedure that she should have died from. And that was 14 years ago, and she's just great and wonderful. People won't believe unless they see. And this is the passage that came to my mind. What we're being asked to do is believe even though we haven't seen. Why? Why should we believe? Are we being asked to take the resurrection of Jesus on blind faith? Or are we being asked to carefully look at the first hand accounts of what happened? Take it as if it were testimony, because it is. And come away truly believing. We all believe Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, that he was born a virgin, he died on the cross of Calvary, and he was raised from the dead. But you know what? That's pretty amazing. Why do you believe that? Because you've seen the resurrected Lord? Thomas did. Isn't that great? John didn't. He saw amazing evidence and he said, "I need to tell you about this. I need to tell you what I saw so that you too may believe, even though you haven't physically seen Jesus." Does this lesson, if these are some things you're not familiar with or haven't thought about in a while, does this lesson strengthen your faith? I hope so, because that's what John wants for us. He wants us to believe. So somebody quote for me John 20, 30 and 31. So John 20, 29 says, "Blessed are those who have not seen and yet believed." There are many other signs that Jesus performed in the presence of his disciples that are not written in this book, in this Gospel of John. But these have been written. This is the very next couple of verses. These have been written that you might believe that Jesus is the Christ, and that by believing, you may have life eternal. John gives us details that Matthew, Mark, and Luke don't to help us truly believe. I was there. I didn't believe when I went in that tomb. Then I see the cloths lying there. Peter still walked away from it not believing. But I saw how they were laid out. John 20 again. Verse 8. He reached the tomb, also went in, and he saw how the clothes were laid out. He saw and believed. Even though they still were struggling with accepting that Jesus was going to rise from the dead. Yes, ma'am. Yeah. And yet he still is struggling with believing he rose from the dead. And what else is going on here? What's part of the dynamic with Peter? Wanting to believe and yet struggling to believe that he's raised from the dead. He had denied Jesus. That's the last time they had conversed. and he's got that in the back of his mind. I'm gonna close. I don't have one on the screen, but I'm gonna look at a couple of verses in Acts 2. So after Jesus finally does appear to them, we know the rest of the story. Jesus ascends to heaven. Jesus had told them in Acts 1, verse 8, you will be my witnesses. You will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and in Judea, Samaria, and then keep going to the uttermost ends of the earth. The key concept in the Gospel of John is belief. The key concept in Acts is witness. Testimony. Same word, same kind of concept. The difference between our testimony today and what the Bible talks about as testimony is these were eyewitnesses. They actually saw it. That's another lesson in and of itself. So in Acts chapter 2, when Peter is preaching and he starts talking about Jesus, he emphasizes how they are witnesses to these events. Verse 24 of Acts 2, God raised him up. How does he know that he raised him up? Because they saw it. Because they were witnesses. Verse 32. This Jesus, God raised up. Of that, we are all witnesses. Peter knew Jesus was dead. Peter saw the grave clothes, marveled, saying, I'm hung up on it. I don't understand how this is possible. And finally, when he sees the resurrected Lord, it all clicks for him. We can't experience that. How are we going to convince our friends that Jesus is the resurrected Lord? Looking at these details can help us. Yes, sir.
I do want to say, though, that you asked earlier, was do we believe on blind faith or the other?
Right. We do not believe on blind faith. But why?
Because of the evidence
that they present. We reason through it. The Bible claims to be inspired. I believe it proves to be inspired. And that's a huge impact on all of us. We are resting our eternal destiny on our belief that this book is from God. And that God is trying to tell us this is what happened. Even though it's amazing, even though it's unbelievable, and scary. What power to take Jesus' body, pull him out of those grave cloths, dematerial. I don't know. I don't know what happened. Well, next week, we're going to see somebody finally see the resurrected Lord. And it's a woman. It's a woman who had 7 demons in her at one time, which makes people go, ooh, that's not such a good, reliable person. Mary Magdalene, it is my favorite post-resurrection appearance of them all. And we're going to take a good close look at it and come away just loving it too. You're going to love it too, if you don't already. Thank you for participating, walking through this with me this morning.